Good afternoon, folks. That time of the day again, time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, joined in studio by my trusty executive director, John Schneider, and our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
I think everybody's tired.
Everybody's tired, but we're ready for the elephant in the room, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm excited because on the phone, joining us today is a good friend. We have joining us combat veteran, New York Times best-selling author, speaker, and host of the Battleground podcast, retired Army infantry captain with the elite 10th Mountain Division, and veteran of 485 days of fierce fighting along the Afghan-Pakistan border, Sean Parnell's unique leadership skills welded his platoon into one of the most fierce and effective American fighting units in modern military history. And we have on the phone with us today the man himself, Sean Parnell. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's good. Great to have you here, man. And hey, I'll tell you what, you were in a lot of battles, you know, and they were very tough. But were any of them as tough as the battle Joe Biden had trying to maintain coherence in the debate on Thursday night? My gosh.
It was a horrible performance, but I think what's perhaps even more egregious than his performance, and it's probably not, this was probably not a surprise to me, you, or anyone in the studio, or anyone who's paying attention. What to me, it's like you had the media for 3 years, not just saying that, hey, look, Biden, hey, he's a little older, maybe he's lost a step, but he's on point. No, they went the opposite direction, Sam. Mm-hmm. These people were basically saying this is the best version of Biden ever. He's sharp. He's focused. Oh, the toughest part of working with Joe Biden is planning for a meeting. And then, boy, the veil was lifted last night, was it not?
Like, oh, my gosh.
I mean, can you imagine people who, in good faith, by the way, rely on CNN for their news, or MSNBC, ABC, NBC, any of these news outlets who regurgitated that propaganda that these videos of Biden being lost were just, and I quote, cheap fakes?
Oh, yeah.
And you see this performance and you're like, okay, clearly that's not true. Also, who's running the country? I mean, there has to be, at least for 30% of the country, Sam, panic over who's running the show.
Yep. Oh, without a doubt. You know, listen, I was the morning after, I'm getting all kinds of calls from media. Folks want to talk about it. And reactions differ, right? And you have some folks that are saying, you know, they're talking about how terrible his performance was. Then there are other folks who are looking at that and trying to feel sorry for the president because, I mean, listen, he's obviously well into cognitive decline and clearly not up to the job of being the president of the United States. And you know, my response was, yes, I from a human perspective, you know, I can feel bad for him. But at the same time, I said, I'm angry because of all his family, the media, you know, the White House insiders, the Democrat hierarchy, all the people that put him up to run and have been gaslighting us for the past few years, trying to tell us, to your point, about how sharp and focused and energetic and everything he is behind the scenes. And much like, you know, the Wizard of Oz, the curtain came crashing down yesterday, and now we know the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, it's so true. And this might sound cruel, and forgive me if it does, but I am all out of feeling bad for him. And the reason is because, like, look how this man has done nothing but lie for most of his career, but most prominently during his time in the White House, along with all of the Democrats in the United States House of Representatives and in the Senate, along with all of their acolytes in the media. And when you look at what was remarkable to me about last night, and of course the stakes were unbelievably high, but it's probably the only time in our lives, Sam, and perhaps anybody who's even listening, and the first time in their lives where they witnessed a debate where you had Donald Trump and you had Joe Biden, two presidents essentially running against mm-hmm. one another, first time in American history, but Donald Trump was standing 10 feet away from the man who is trying to put him in jail for life,
mm-hmm.
destroy his name, destroy his legacy, go after his children,
mm-hmm.
use the immense and enormous power of the government to take, you know, his business away. I mean, you have a president of the United States using the power of the courts and the justice system and the government to go after his chief rival. And look, Democrat, Republican, I don't care political parties here. That is scary. That is scary to me. And you had Trump standing 10 feet away from this guy last night. So the media and these Democrats, they brought this situation on themselves through lies and deceit and gaslighting of the American people. And what I say to people is that, you know, all politicians, you know, and I'm not trying to paint with broad strokes when
right.
I say all, but let's just say most politicians lie and spin. But what the Democrats, the modern day Democrats, and I'm not talking about old school Democrats. I come from a family of union Democrats.
As do
that
I, party, yeah.
That party is gone. But these Democrats, they're like anti-truth. And what I mean by that is they tell the opposite of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not only have Biden lost a step, it's Biden's the sharpest he's ever been. Not only is that a lie, it's the opposite of what's actually happening. And we see that time and again with everything. And it's like, Sam, the economy, right? You have James Carville, mm-hmm. Clinton Democrat, saying, oh, well, hey, look, it's the economy, stupid. He coined the phrase which both Republicans and Democrat candidates for years have relied on, focus on the economy, everything else falls into place. But the Biden administration and these Democrats now, because they're so anti-truth, they're out there at the podium every day, Sam, saying, well, the economy is great, stupid.
Right.
They're surprised why that's not working. It's not working on the American people. You know?
Well, you said the president lost a step. I think he misplaced an entire staircase. Okay. I mean, what a mess this thing is. And now your point is spot on. And what makes this election different is because this isn't between an incumbent who's been doing the job and then a candidate who's promising a brighter future. This is between two men who have both held the job, and we have the ability to remember what life was like under President Trump just 4 short years ago and what it's been like these last 4. And you know, to your point about the economy, on average, food prices are up 20%. But some of the staples like eggs or milk or things of that nature, they're up 50, 60%. You know, gas is up 50%. Mortgage rates have more than doubled, making home ownership unaffordable for even middle class folks, right? Yeah. The invasion at the southern border, it's wide open. 100,000 plus Americans die every year, you know, from fentanyl and opioid overdoses. You know, and I mean, what was crazy yesterday in the debate was seeing President Trump talk about the terrorists that are coming over the border. And Biden looked at him like, what are you talking about? And meanwhile, you and I both know, I think last year was 169 folks that were on the terror watch list that were apprehended by the Border Patrol. Now, those are the ones they caught. What about the ones they haven't, right?
Yeah.
You had FBI Director Wray a month ago talking about how the warning lights are flashing. Okay, you know, we're in trouble here, and Democrats have put this guy up. And, you know, to your point about the lawfare, Sean, I think that's why they felt comfortable putting Joe Biden, even with all his frailties, up, because they thought that their lawfare could do the dirty work for them and defeat President Trump, and now they're panicking because it's not.
You know, Sam, I think that's a really shrewd point. You know, and it's often... It's not one that I've heard made since the debate. And you're absolutely right. They expected the lawfare to do the heavy lifting. And you're also right that the world seems to be coming apart at the seams. And, you know, having run 2 campaigns myself, mm-hmm. one for the House in Western Pennsylvania, one for the Senate, I can tell you that the conditions on the political battlefield right now are such that a campaign narrative, I'm talking specifically on behalf of President Trump. Like, you always want to, as a candidate, you got to come up with, hey, what's your vision? What's your narrative? What kind of leader do you want to be? And where do you want to take the people,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
How best do you want to represent them? Well, the conditions are such on the political battlefield in America right now that story is writing itself. And President Trump, you know, you're 100% right, because I think when push comes to shove on November 4th this year, you know, because not everybody's tethered into politics like we are, Sam, but the American people, I think, are going to look at, okay, what life was like under President Trump just 3-4 years ago, and what life is like under Biden now. And I think they're going to say food was more affordable, you know, under President Trump. Gas was more affordable under President Trump. My 401k was worth more under President Trump. I had more money in my savings. I didn't have as much credit card debt. Our border, there sure as heck wasn't the chaos under Trump at the bar. I mean, people have eyes and ears. They can see this for themselves. And the whole crime in America is through the roof. And people feel it, Sam. People know it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from Pittsburgh, man. Like, my dad used to take me down to see baseball games at Three Rivers Stadium, and we used to run down to the stadium at the seventh inning, because back then at Three Rivers you could get in for free, and I used to watch games on his shoulders there. I don't think that I could have the same experience with my children in Pittsburgh now, because Pittsburgh, I love that town. I bleed black and yellow, but Democrats, everything that they touch in terms of leadership and politics seems to die. And Americans feel that, Sam. Crime is through the roof, and the spin of like, oh, well, crime is down under Biden. Well, yeah, when you don't count New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Miami, these are major Democrat cities where crime is through the roof. They're just simply not reporting their crime anymore. It's like, well, yeah, Americans can see that when you don't report crime, crime goes down. So
yes,
it just, their lives are worse off. Americans' lives are worse off in every way. And ultimately, I think that bodes well for not just Trump, but Republicans up and down the ticket.
Well, it does. And I think that's one of the concerns, one of the reasons why Democrats are panicking so much. They're seeing the disastrous performance of Joe Biden, and they're wondering how it's going to affect them down ticket. Mm-hmm. And these are Democrats that are running for Senate, for governor, for Congress. And I really do believe it is going to affect, you know, the Democrats down ticket. I mean, how can any Democrat have enthusiasm for what they saw the other night? Okay.
Yeah.
But hey, they do what they do, you know?
Yeah, they do what they do. And, you know, the Democrats, I think, you know, if we're looking from their perspective, the silver lining is they've got a great infrastructure to chase ballots and to go after these mail-in ballots and add people to the automatic list and all this other stuff, both in Pennsylvania and other swing states. So now I think the task turns to that. But again, the Democrats are in a really, really, really tough spot, Sam, because if you look at their support with, say, black Americans, Trump is getting something between 25% and 30%. If the election were held tomorrow, 25% and 30% of the black vote, and again, if the polls are accurate, and he's getting 40% of the Latino vote. Mm-hmm. And you look at, like, kids from 18 to 25, they were like Biden plus 20 in 2020, and now they're Trump plus 5. And you have to ask yourself why you think that is, and wonder if it's because they're being priced out of the American dream. When you look at the average salary here in America, of just average salary, $60,000 a year, takes $106,000 to be able to buy a house. Well, that math doesn't work for somebody coming out of college, did all the right stuff, and maybe paid their loans on time or worked their butt off, and now they're in a union. How are you buying a house, you know, at $106,000 a year if you're not making that as your first salary? You're not. And so I think Americans at every level are worse off, and Democrats are hemorrhaged, not just bleeding support, but hemorrhaging support in traditionally Democrat areas. And it's a 5-alarm fire for them, as you said.
Well, and I think when we look at what's happening across the country, I think you're absolutely spot on. And right now they're having some troubles. You saw the other day, Jamal Bowman, you know, a crazy congressman, you know, the fire alarm pour. You know, it's a shame Joe Biden didn't have him in the audience at the debate, because he could have pulled the fire alarm and maybe tried to save him there, right? But he went down to a resounding defeat, and I expect Cori Bush, another member of the squad, to go down to defeat when they hold the primary in St. Louis here in August. So I mean, I think their party is realizing that you cannot have these crazy people in there. I mean, we're talking about the party that can't define a woman, right? Yeah. I mean, they want men to participate in women's sports. You know, Biden looked dumbfounded. And how could he blow the only Democrat advantage that they've been running on for the last how many years, you know, has been abortion. And Biden made an unintelligible mess of that question.
I don't even know what he was talking about. Do you?
Like, no.
First, second, third trimester, it made no sense.
Right.
And I got to tell you, Trump did what every candidate should do. You know, answer the question, follow your heart, but then immediately pivot back to just how insanely radical the Democrats, and I'm talking, when I say Democrats, just for people who are listening, I'm not talking about Western Pennsylvania Democrats. I'm talking about Democrats in Washington, but that party has become so radical on abortion. Third trimester abortion? Very, very few people in America support that. And if you're a candidate, local, state, federal, that's how you handle it. You handle that question with nuance. You handle that question with sensitivity. And then you pivot right back to just how radical the Democrats are. And that's what Trump did. And you're so right. Biden just, for Sam, they were running commercials in Pennsylvania on local sheriff's races on abortion.
Right.
Like, how the heck does sheriff have anything to do with that? But that's all they have, and Biden couldn't even do that.
The county executive race last year, I think the county executive race, you know, turned on the issue of abortion, despite the county executive had no role whatsoever in any of that.
It's ridiculous. It's preposterous.
Oh, absolutely. So, no, this is, I'll tell you what, now, do you want to talk at all about how you're working to help change this thing with Keystone Renewal and what you guys are doing with the Sentinel Action Fund and the Republican State Leadership Committee?
Yeah, well, so we realized, I talked earlier about Democrat infrastructure to register voters and chase down mail-in ballots. Well, Republicans really haven't had an answer for that in Pennsylvania in 20, or certainly not in 20, but definitely didn't in 22 either, and that would have made the difference, you know?
Yep.
There were lots of issues with the 2020 election. There just were. Whether you look at, you know, how voting law was changed, and you look at mail-in ballots, first time it was implemented, there were lots of questions. So regardless of how you feel, I think that's a fair assessment. But what people don't realize, when you look at, this is just like insider politically talk, but talk about high propensity voters. Let's identify the margin in 2020 between Trump and Biden in Pennsylvania. Razor thin, 80,000 votes, even with all the craziness, right? Mm-hmm. It was a crazy time. So you look at high propensity voters, and we classify high propensity voters as three of four voters. And for people who are listening, a three of four voter is somebody who's voted three times out of the last four election cycles. Four of four voters, four times out of the last four election cycles. Those are our high propensity voters. Okay. So in 2020, like just through our analysis and work with this program, trying to figure out who were like what tranches of Republican voters are we going to go after to try to get them to opt in on this mail-in ballot program, which is absolutely essential.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we found, Sam, was that over 100,000 high prop Republican voters stayed home and did not vote during the 2020 election. Like, that is the difference.
Yes.
Like, had we just turned out our people. And by the way, this is during the highest presidential turnout in the history of our country. We still had Republicans in Pennsylvania, 100,000+ people stay home. If we're to win elections statewide, that absolutely cannot happen. And so our strategy is twofold. To go not only going after those high prop voters, getting them to opt in on the mail-in ballot program to make sure that they show up and to make sure that give us an ability to go, you know, track their ballot applications and track whether or not they mail in their ballot, but also go after low propensity Republican voters. So those two tranches are our strategy. And Sam, I'm super, super excited. Like, we're hitting all of our goals. If we hit 200,000, you know, opt in on the mail-in ballot program, if we end up getting 200,000 Republicans to return their mail-in ballot and vote by mail, whether it's high prop, low prop voters, doesn't matter. Like, by the numbers, it's going to be very, 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 very difficult for Democrats to win this state with the registration trending in the way that it is.
Well, you know, I'm solidly behind this. I've been pushing for Republicans to use mail-in ballots since 2020, you know, because what's happened is because of the way the law is structured, if you vote by mail, you automatically get an application sent to you the following year. And what's happened is Democrats have built up an edge. So even in lower turnout elections, their edge in mail-in ballots has allowed them to win in many of these municipal and state judge races. And what we need to do is
I've
taken and compared it to, you know, us Republicans trying to run a 100-yard race against somebody and giving them a 60-yard head start. You know, we need to use all legal means available. That means early voting, going to the elections office, or applying and voting by mail or absentee, or showing up on election day. But there's too many things that get in the way on election day. Vote early. Let's get that vote in. Let's bank that vote.
Absolutely. And, like, let me give you a military analogy, which I know you'll understand. But if you fight the same way in combat, your enemy identifies how you fight. They exploit your weaknesses because they watch you. Well, politics is just like war, but without the bullets. So there are still tactics. The tactics are remarkably similar. The Democrats changed their strategy in 2020, as you mentioned. They went all in on the mail-in ballot program, knowing that Republicans were suspicious of it, and rightfully so in many cases. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But Democrats know how we fight, and they exploited our weaknesses. And they did it to great effect in 2020, and then again in 2022, and then in some of these off-cycle races. And so what we're doing is we're changing the way that we fight politically. I've dedicated so much of my time and energy to election integrity in this state, and I'm going to continue to do that. But we have to recognize that in order to change the rules and make it better, we can't cry in our beer. We have to fight with the political rules on the battlefield as they are, and not just fight, but we have to be better than our political opponent. And right now we are. And what we're seeing, Sam, is that the Democrats, in the silver lining here is, yes, they have a huge head start, but they've been so good at what they've done over the last couple of cycles that the well is running dry for them. Ours is largely untapped. And so, you know, it's just we can do this, and we're carrying the ball down the field at what I think is like an unbelievable tempo. And come election day, I really think that it's going to make a difference, because, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, when you talk about giving Democrats a head start, because and it's not even just like a head start. It allows them to spend their money in a far more efficient way. So if you look at Pennsylvania, imagine we were in, you know, a military tactical operations center, and we had a map of Pennsylvania on the wall. And that map of Pennsylvania was divided into 67 counties, which are how many counties are in our state. And as someone who's running this program, if you're doing the job right, you've got Excel spreadsheets of every Republican, historic Republican voter in those counties. And, okay, you look at that Excel spreadsheet, you get somebody to opt in the program, all of a sudden they got a ballot application coming to their door. So you got it right there on that Excel spreadsheet, ballot application sent. Then it's just a matter of having your people, okay, let's call that person, make the phone call. Did you fill out your ballot application? No? Okay, well, make sure you fill it in next week. Then the ballot application comes in. You check it off on your Excel spreadsheet. Ballot is sent to that person. And then it's a matter, hey, did you get your mail-in ballot? Did you fill it in? Did you mail it back in? If not, please do it. And you call them as many times as you have to do it in order to get them to return their ballot. But the point is, as you do that thousands of times over across the state, you're simply, as somebody turns in their ballot, you're taking them off that list. Right. And that gives you, as a party, as an organization, as a candidate, a very surgical way to spend your money on the people that you have to get out the vote, all the people that are left. And that's what the Democrats do so well. And come hell or high water, we're going to do it too this cycle.
Well, listen, I'm looking forward to it now. Sean, what can I or our listeners do to help you in this program?
Well, first of all, if you want to get smart about what the program is like, go to skiptheline.pa.com and check that out, learn all about it. But I would also say to people who are listening, make a list of 10 people. Take accountability for those 10 people in your life to either get them to vote by mail or get them out to the polls. And then ask them to take that pledge too. You find 10 additional people in your life to get them out and get them to the polls. Because there is something to, you know, there is something to the phrase, too big to rig. You know, we got the voter rolls. They are what they are. If our people show up and we're doing the right stuff, we're going to win. We just are. And especially with the economic conditions in America and the political conditions in America, the way that they are right now, I hate when people, I mean, everywhere I go, Sam, people say to me, you know, I'm just one person. What can I do? I'm like, well, you could do a lot. You know, this idea that we're the silent majority, and I'm sure you've heard that a lot. I hate that because silence changes nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're just one person. You know, get out there, take accountability for 10 people in your life, get them to the polls, ask those people to take the 10-person pledge too, have them get them to the polls. And one person can create a movement. So don't hesitate to take action in your community, because that is oftentimes what changes the tide, especially during very difficult times in America. So one person can make a difference.
Well, Sean, I know that you have to run, but I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show here today. I look forward to seeing you soon. And, you know, congratulations on in your personal life, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Yep, we'll talk to you soon, man.
You got it, buddy. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
Folks, we'll be right back after the break on The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM. And 99.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to The Elephant in the Room. Hey, folks, John, in the last segment, we had Sean Parnell. I mean, what a great guy. And, you know, he was a great candidate. I mean, I think, you know, if things had been a little bit different in 2020, he would have been my representative in Congress. And he was on track, you know, to be our candidate for U.S. Senate here back in 2022.
Yeah.
Just a great guy. Couldn't be happier. You know, his personal news he had, you know, he got his family back, got custody of his kids back, and just absolutely thrilled, you know, for Sean. But we were laughing in the last segment here, talking about Biden at the debate. Mm-hmm. Okay. Folks, we're just going to give you a little bit, for folks who may not have sat through that thing, you went to bed early or just couldn't hear, because you may have been at a debate party like me, had to watch it twice. And Daryl, you want to play this clip? Give folks an example of what they heard last night.
We're talking about my clip, not your clip.
Your clip.
Okay.
Yes, your clip.
Here we go.
President Biden, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to this question about the national debt.
He had the largest national debt of any president in a four-year period, number one. Number two, that $2 trillion tax cut benefited the very wealthy. What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America. I mean, billionaires in America. And what's happening? They're in a situation where they, in fact, pay 8.2% in taxes. If they just paid 24%, 25%, either one of those numbers, they'd raise $500 million, billion dollars, I should say, in a 10-year period. We'd be able to wipe out his debt. We'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with dealing with everything we have to do with. Look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you.
Folks, do you know what the hell he said? You know, and the nerve of him and Democrats today calling for President Trump to be fact-checked, talking about lies. I mean, this was just a sample, you know, of some of the stuff. Listen to this one when he was asked, why should voters trust him to solve the immigration crisis?
I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either.
You were tired after your most recent encounter with me.
So, folks, I mean, you could hear what a mess, you know, he made of that last night. And we could go on and on. As a matter of fact, President Trump was out with a commercial. They did a new ad that they came out with. Let me tee this thing up here for you. But this is a great one. It's 1:34, and it is nothing but President Biden speaking last night.
Folks, how are you? Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do dealing with everything we have to do with, if we finally beat Medicare,
and finding housing for Black Americans. The impact of on the choice, the idea that they're gonna, I'm proposing that everybody, they pay, the millionaires pay 1%. So no one after, I've not raised the cost of Social Security for anybody. I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. And wants to get away with, get rid of the ability of Medicare for the us to be able to negotiate drug prices with the big pharma companies.
What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America. Billionaires in America.
No one was hurt. No one Israeli was accidentally killed, and it stopped.
And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
Folks, that is what President Biden was saying last night. Now, how could anyone watch that, listen to that, and believe in any way, shape, or form that that man is capable of performing the duties as the President of the United States, which is well known and documented? It's probably the toughest job in the world.
You know, Sam, we got a caller. Somebody left a voice message at RCAC last night that said that they should invoke the 25th. Amendment, where the cabinet.
Well, yeah, listen, that's a popular thing that was going around a bit on social media, but you know what happens when you invoke the 25th Amendment? You get the vice president, right? And if we think he was unintelligible, wait about you get one of those word salads from the vice president. I mean, Democrats are in a full-fledged panic today. They don't know what to do. You have Tom Friedman, who's a good friend of the president's, the New York Times, coming out and saying that he needs to step down. The Wall Street Journal has a headline here: could Democrats replace Biden as their nominee? You know, and I was on social media last night. I was joking, and I put out on X, I said that that the lights are burning deep into the night at the governor's mansion in Harrisburg, you know, as Democrat consultants called Josh Shapiro, and he practices his convention speech in front of the mirror. I said, rumor has it, he keeps saying, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest one of all, okay? Because they got to find somebody else.
Yeah.
Because as some of the Democrat folks, Democrat pundits, and media figures said last night, if they're going into this with Joe Biden, he's toast.
You know, Sam, 2 weeks on this program here, you and Keith both said it was 50-50. You know, he said 50-50. Percent chance that he would be replaced. What would you say the chances are today?
Well, I think they're even greater, you know, but here's the thing. They have to be replaced. For the Democrats to pull that off, they have to do it with the cooperation of Joe Biden.
Yes.
You know, and I think, as we were talking about with Sean in the earlier segment, we've been gaslit by these folks. You know, they've known that Biden was bad, that he was suffering from cognitive decline, that he wasn't up to the job, but they kept hiding all this from us, okay? So you wonder, you know, would he be willing to participate in it? Because here's the thing, right now, the Democrat primaries are over as of June 8th. He's already accumulated the delegates. They're committed to him. So the only way they can be replaced would be if he were to release the delegates. Now, if he did that today, or leading up to the convention, then what would happen is you could end up with a very tough floor fight among the Democrat Party. And look, we know that they're split. You know, half the country, or their party, you know, is running around on campuses and in the streets with these protests. You know, they're Hamas sympathizers and things like that. You already are hearing about the protests that are slated to take place at the Democrat convention. This would be insane. Now, if they take and nominate him, but then he drops out afterwards, then I'm being told that the decision to replace him would be made by the 50 state chairs of the Democrat Party, which would be much more manageable for those folks. So listen, you know, as pleased as I am at President Trump's performance last night and at Joe Biden's lack of, I'm also concerned and worried because early voting in Pennsylvania will start as early as September 15th. If the Democrats replace somebody at the convention, that's August 22nd. That's less than a month before early voting starts. Now, it would be hard for them to be able to get any momentum, but it would also be hard for us to do all the negative opposition research and things like that that are necessary and educate the public on just who this, you know, false stalking horse is. What do you think, Daryl?
No, I think a lot of people, you know, the Trump gave his base what they wanted, and I think last time was a pretty clear win for Trump. I think my social media is there's probably a big middle, you know, that big squishy middle that, you know, both parties are trying to covet, and a lot of them were just waiting out four more years. In 2028, regardless of what happens in November, this will be different. Different energy on both sides. You know, you got to figure this is the last time either guy's going to run, obviously by law one of them, but that's what it came down to me. It's just waiting on four more years to get different energy at that seat. Not necessarily a political kind of thing, but just different energy. Watching both sides to an extent last night. Biden was obviously his, you know, you just played it. We just heard it. And just getting new blood in there for the betterment of the country moving forward on both sides.
Well, I think you know, I would agree with that. And we know elections are one in the middle.
Right. Right.
There
exactly.
Are people that absolutely are opposed to President Trump. And they're going to vote for whomever is on the Democrat ballot. We get it. And conversely, there are folks who are, you know, they're going to vote Republican no matter what. They're going to vote for President Trump. It's the middle. It's the independents.
Right.
They're going to determine who wins this race. So it's like, who did a better job in reaching the independents? And to me, you know, I and obviously I'm biased, right? But I believe it has to be President Trump.
Well, Biden didn't do a good job of reaching anybody last night.
Well, that's
period. Exactly. Trump could have just sat there silent, but Biden just lost the room last night.
You know, the bar had been set so low for President Biden with all the criticism that he'd been receiving from Republicans and other conservatives, you know, questioning his fitness. Is for the job, his cognitive decline, the whole bit. But even though the bar was set lower than a limbo stick,
right,
he still wasn't able to reach it.
But did you notice in the past couple of weeks of commentary in a lot of Republican circles raised that bar almost strategically to say, okay, you know, maybe Tassley was a little too low. They raised it to, okay, you know, he's done this before. He's been debating for 50 years. He's very competent. Raising that bar ever so slightly before last night to see him do what he did, which even makes that just the perception of, you know, and we know perception is reality, perception of that collapse that much more precipitous because the bar had been raised to, artificially, of course, because, I mean, you know, like Sean said and like we've said, a lot of people have seen this coming, and this may have been a culture shock for some people or just a shock last night.
Well, like I said, I what I care about, and I think I was asked on the radio this morning in an interview, you know, about January 6th and about claims of the election, you know, being stolen and things like that. What did I think? And I said, I think the people are concerned about their future,
right?
You know, and not the past, you know, and, you know, again, it's about policies, Daryl.
Right, right.
I mean, under President Trump, there was a very extremely low inflation.
Sure.
You know, the Fed sets a goal of trying to keep inflation at or below 2%. When President Trump turned this over to Joe Biden in January of 2021, inflation was 1.4%, you know, rising to over 9% in June of 2022.
Sure.
Okay. It's still running at over 3.5%. You know, and so many folks don't understand how this works. When they hear from the media or they hear the Biden administration talking about, well, we've brought inflation down. And no, what you've done is you've reduced the rate of inflationary growth, but you haven't lowered the price of all the previous inflation, which is over 19% since he's been in. So we are really, you know, in trouble there. You couple that with what we're talking about at the southern border. You know, you talk about the entire world seeming to be in flames. You know, Hamas, you know, coming into Israel, that would have never happened under President Trump. You got Russia invaded Ukraine. And I don't know how many folks forget that part of the deal there was that Biden made a faux pas in a speech that he made, almost giving a green light to Vladimir Putin. And he said, if it wasn't too big, okay, you have China rattling its sabers in the South China Sea, you know, threatening Taiwan. I mean, it's anywhere you look in this world, it seems to be in flames. And, you know, I don't think it's hyperbole to wonder about where we're going, you under this administration. I mean, former Secretary of Defense Gates, William Gates, had said that Joe Biden has been wrong in every single foreign policy decision over the last 40 years. So now we're like at 50 because he said that 10 years ago. And Joe Biden is a guy that told President Obama not to send the SEALs in to go after Osama bin Laden. I mean, it just doesn't stop, right? And look at how disastrous the withdrawal from Afghanistan was. And he's and again, you have Biden and his folks saying that President Trump lies. And we have Biden on stage last night saying that no American service members have died under his watch. And I understand, you know, in his defense, he was busy looking at his watch while the 13 coffins of the 13 Americans that were killed in that disastrous withdrawal, you know, passed by him on the tarmac at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. I mean, so this just, guys, I don't know where this is going, but I'm very, if Joe Biden remains the nominee, I believe he's headed to certain defeat. I just worry about what the Democrats are going to do, because if there's one thing that they like more than anything else, it's power.
I'm here for the we talked about this on our show, the GD Morning Show. I'm here for the strategy of it. I love the debates. I don't get in the muck and mire. We've got so many hosts that do that. I love the debates. I love the strategy. I feel like at times I'm almost like a failed political strategist. I kind of want to see where this all heads into debate number two, if in fact, you know, it's scheduled, but if in fact both guys there, because that's where you'll learn from your mistakes in debate number one. And Trump nailed debate number one last night or earlier this week. I think it's on Biden to see how he reacts and how, by extension, the party reacts.
Yeah.
If Biden's even there for debate number two, you know, he's the guy to watch on this one because Trump knows what he's doing.
I don't see how there is a debate number two.
Right.
If you look, if it's Joe Biden, uh-huh. You think they're going to send him back out there? There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and so it's just. And that brings into question, Daryl, why was the debate held so early this time? This is the earliest presidential debate in history, okay? So was this held this early? I mean, again, we're talking, you know, over a month and a half before the convention.
Maybe a litmus test? Just to see. I mean, the sooner you get him in that situation, for better or worse, the sooner you see what you have, therefore, the sooner, the more track you have to November to react.
Well, and I think there's some legitimacy to that conjecture.
Because if I'm the Democrats and this what happened, I'd rather have it happen in late June than late August.
No, absolutely. So you wonder, did these people put him up to this? But then again, the people that would be doing this are the people that are part of the Biden insider, the Biden group.
Yeah.
They'll never have the same level of power or degree of power,
right,
you know, with somebody else, okay? So why would they set him up for what was essentially abject humiliation?
That's why this is the whole, to me, is fascinating. It's a fascinating process, the who, what, why, where, when of the entire situation on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm excited. We still have at least 5 months to go. You know, here next week we have July 4th. Yep. We'll be celebrating our celebration of Independence Day, and onward to November. But they talk about debates. I think one of the things we just talked about, when you look forward to presidential debates, you're looking for like a moment. You know, is something going to happen there that is going to take and change the trajectory of the race? Well, polls have been showing that President Trump has been tied or leading in most of the polls, we're talking national polls up to this point, and certainly in the swing state polls. So, you know, Biden certainly needed to do something to change that trajectory. Based upon the performance last night, I fully expect President Trump to increase his lead in the polls going forward. So it's going to remain, it's going to be interesting to see, what Democrats do and, how deep the panic gets, if Trump opens up like a large single point lead.
When are we going to start seeing some of those polls?
I think we'll see some next week.
Okay. Yeah.
I believe by the end of next week, you'll have some that are taken this weekend.
Yeah, some overnight.
You're trying to gauge, yes.
Almost absolutely. Overnight. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. So it's going to be interesting here, folks. And for our listeners, it's going to be interesting for you because we're here for it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be bringing all this information to you as best that we can. And again, John, hey, yeah. Being that we sit here in Allegheny County, which is the second most populous county, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in a critical swing state.
Most Republican.
I'm looking forward to a lot of visits this year. From President Trump, from his surrogates,
sure.
And from the others. And if go back, we're just talking about, right? So surrogates come out and they speak on your behalf. What Democrat surrogate can come out and tell the public that President Biden is fit for the job? Where's Bob Casey at, right? What's Bob Casey's position on this? Does he believe that President Biden should continue to run? Casey's been in office 18 years.
Yeah.
So almost half the time, that Biden had been there. And so he knows him very well. What's he saying?
I don't know. I was actually going to look that up on Twitter or Facebook.
You're slow, my friend, slow. But you know what? Hey, and I say that because this isn't the first time that Bob Casey's lied to us. Back in 2022, after John Fetterman suffered a stroke, Bob Casey went all around Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, telling people how, he knew John, John was going to be fine.
Yeah.
And who would have thought, or who would have thunk it, I say, okay, that in just the last few months, that Senator Fetterman has shown more leadership in just the last few months on issues like the border and anti-Semitism and things like that than Bob Casey has in 18 years. So that's why I'm excited about the candidacy of Dave McCormick, our candidate for U.S. Senate. Dave's in town. I heard he was on the radio today and or yesterday, and he's out there. He had Bill Barr, former attorney general under the Trump administration, was in town, speaking on his behalf. And they look forward to meeting, the General Barr, because I thought he did a good job.
Yeah.
There are folks that are unhappy and believe that he should have done one thing or another. I can tell you that he did investigate things because I know that I was contacted personally by folks from the Department of Justice back in 2020 wanting to know if particular things that had been said or bandied about were in fact true. And I had to respond that, in regards to here, they were not. So I can tell you that he did. For all those folks out there that are busy reading some of the far-right conservative media and believe that he didn't do anything, I want to let you know that, as a matter of fact, he actually did. So look forward to that meeting and that conversation. No, it's, hey, guys, exciting times. Looking forward to this election. And I think, John, I think this might give some wind at the sails to some of our other candidates. Can James Hayes, your candidate for Congress in PA-12, running against Summer Lee, can this give him a boost? Can this make a difference in him? Particularly Summer Lee. Yeah. She was just out this week. We had a 12-year-old girl that was raped and murdered by two illegal immigrants down in Houston. And when the media went for comment, Summer Lee just sloughed it off and said, oh, I'm from Pittsburgh. I don't know anything about that. Okay. She's voting on national policy. She's voting and weighing in on national issues. She should certainly have something to say about what's being done here on the border. Hopefully, that can help James Hayes. And then Rob McCurry, our friend, West Point graduate, Bronze Star winner, from the United States Army. Rob is running against Chris DeLuzio, who's a progressive whip in the Progressive Caucus. So while he isn't part of the squad, he's usually standing right there with them, okay? And hopefully this will give Rob the impetus necessary and needed to be able to defeat Chris here. Again, I think, what Sean was talking about, Republicans finally have built an infrastructure to compete with the Democrats. We're executing, you know, on that plan. And I certainly don't think that Joe Biden did anything yesterday that's going to take and boost or increase their turnout. Matter of fact, I think it's going to hurt it. Mm-hmm. And that the panic among so many of these Democrats is well felt. So, John, we have something to talk about here, right? We got the Allegheny County Republican Committee picnic coming up on Sunday, August 4th.
August 4th in South Fayette Township.
If you want to learn more about it, you can go to our website at allegheny.gop. That's allegheny.gop. You can find more information about the picnic there.
It's posted on the bottom of our homepage.
Oh, wow. Okay. John, you are efficient. That's why you are the best executive director here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Hey, listen, you got stiff competition, man. We got 67 counties here.
Yeah,
this isn't like Delaware, where Joe Biden's from, where he's able to just take and stumble through, you know, count on a couple hundred thousand votes, you know, each year or each election, and his ability to stay in office. This is different. This is the big time, the major leagues. And you, my friend, are a true professional.
Why, thank you.
Well, folks, listen, you heard from Sean Parnell in the first half of the show. In the second half, we played you some of the clips from last night's debate. And if you didn't see the debate, try to look it up and watch it. If you're a Republican, you'll enjoy it. If you're a Democrat, you know, maybe go out and do something in the yard. Okay? But until next week, friends, time to sign off. But until next week, this is your host, Sam DeMarco, and the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. And I want to wish all of you a very happy 4th of July and Independence Day. Talk to you next week on the Elephant in the Room.